So my hope is for people to live into their authentic selves by living a newer and better and truer story about who they are and how the world works.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Ultimately answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? And right now, we are in the middle of a series where I have the honor of interviewing incredible guests to see how hope has played a role in their story when it comes to unexpected life events and ultimately healing. In today's episode, we're putting our learning hats on. Are you ready? We're going to be hearing from Ian Cron as he shares with us how the Enneagram can be a helpful tool in navigating the healing process. Ian is an Enneagram teacher, psychotherapist, podcast host of the wildly popular podcast Typology, and author of multiple books, including his brand new book, The Story of You, which you can get your hands on right now. In this week's episode, I cannot wait for you to hear from Ian Cron as he talks about the Enneagram, as he talks about our healing process, how the Enneagram can be a tool for us to discover ourselves and also our shadow side, which, well, we'll talk about during this podcast as well, what exactly that shadow side is. All right, let's get into it. I think you're going to gain a lot from Ian's wisdom. There's a lot of wisdom that he shares. On this episode of Hope Still Wins, here's my conversation with Ian Cron. Ian, I am so pumped. Very, very excited for you to be here today. Thanks for joining Hope Still Wins.
Ben, I've looked forward to seeing you again.
You know, we did your podcast, Typology. I was a guest on that podcast. I honestly, out of any of the podcasts that I've done, I can remember and point to a lot of the depth and the content of that podcast, because for me, it was like a, I don't know, I think we were on there over an hour, like an hour long therapy session, which was absolutely incredible for me. I appreciate you doing that. But we're here today to talk about a couple things. One of the big things right now is your books have always been impactful for many. I'm very thankful for this book, the new book you just came out with, The Story of You. When did this come out?
Let me see. I don't know, 12 days ago?
12 days ago. Well, congratulations. It's a huge deal.
Thank you.
It's a huge accomplishment to write one book, and you've written many, and I'll share that here later on, all the books that people can find for you. But a lot of your work is around the Enneagram. And I would just like to start this out by asking you, why the Enneagram? Where did this passion for this tool come from?
Yeah, well, I first learned about the Enneagram when I was a grad student working to become a psychotherapist, studying to become a psychotherapist. And I happened upon the Enneagram while on a retreat in the mountains of Colorado. And in this retreat center, there was a library, and I didn't have anything to read with me. So I just saw a book called The Enneagram, pulled it off a shelf. And I remember thinking to myself, where has this been? Like, I've been studying personality theory and personality development for a year now, and this is so accessible and so uncannily accurate and helpful. People don't need to go to grad school necessarily to learn about the inner terrain of themselves and of other people. Fast forward, I kind of dabbled for a bunch of years in the Enneagram world, and then about 10 years ago, I really did a deep dive, got so excited about it. I wrote my first book called The Road Back to You. And then my most recent book is the logical follow-up to that one, The Story of You.
So you saw this Enneagram. By the way, I live in the mountains of Colorado, so I'm hoping that wisdom at some point in my life translates over and that I can, you know, pull a book off the shelf and find that passion. But when you first laid eyes on the Enneagram, when you first started to read about it, what about it stood out to you, though, that said this could be a good tool for so many if it comes to personal growth, if it comes to healing, et cetera?
Well, first of all, as compared to lots of other similar instruments or typologies, it was accessible. It really described people so accurately. It was actionable, right? It was like, oh, I can work on myself right out the gate, you know? I don't need to, you know, spend a gajillion years here trying to figure out the system. It's really well laid out. And I just saw the fruit of it in my own work as a therapist. I mean, it's like people could grab hold of it and begin to understand their lives, the broken stories that they feel trapped in. And yeah, I mean, the proof's in the pudding, right? Mm-hmm.
I shared this with you last time, but not only has it been great for me, I've been a fan of the Enneagram now for probably 5 years, and did the tests and have continued to do tests just to make sure that I'm not changing too much, or maybe I am, but I've you and I share the same number. We're a four. Mm-hmm. And there's two things that happened. So I had myself take, I had my now wife and my parents take it. They're the closest, you know, relationships to me. They're also the people that can frustrate me the most. We all took the test and we all shared our numbers. Not only did I find, and we'll talk about your person, like the personal love and understanding for myself, I started to understand them better. When they're weak, how I could respond. When they were strong, how I could encourage. The things that frustrated me and just felt like, hey, do they not see how ridiculous this is? I saw that when we took the test, it highlighted those things and it spoke to why that's the way they see the world. Have you seen that? Is that a common story with people, or is my story just a one-off?
No, it's very, very common. I think once you learn your own Enneagram type, as well as the Enneagram types of those around you, those you love, those you work with, those you encounter on a daily basis, what arises in you is profound empathy and compassion. What arises in you is an understanding of the broken story that they're trapped in. And you also learn how you can wisely help them, with their permission, to find their way out of those old wounded stories to become the highest expression of who they are.
Can we talk for a second then? I just got back from a conference. I did an intensive on kind of the nature versus nurture in my own life. So I kind of dove into who I am as a human, who have I been since I was born, and then what kind of nurture has added into that and the pains, and we talked through this. So can we talk then about these pains and these things that we get stuck within? How do we get there? And then also I want to know, how long do people live? Without the tools and without some help, how long can people live in these cycles of just being trapped?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, all of us come into the world and we begin to get bombarded with messages from those we love, from our coaches, from our teachers, from our peers, from you know, all kinds of sources, right? And we internalize those messages. We start to take on false beliefs about who we are and how the world works, how we think the world works. And those kind of begin to coalesce into a broken story. You know, we all think about our lives through the lens of a story, right? And all of those begin to craft a narrative using those broken messages. And that narrative helps us as little kids, right? Make sense of the world and our experiences. Like, we need a narrative, right? May not be a great one, but we need it, right? The problem happens when we unconsciously drag that old story into adulthood and continue to live in it. Right. So there are 9 Enneagram types. Right. Let me just give you an example. You and I are both Enneagram 4s. We're called the Romantics. And maybe in a minute we can just pop through the stories of all 9 types so people become familiar with them. But, you know, the broken story of the four revolves around this misguided idea that they're missing something crucial inside that others seem to have. And until they regain it, they will never be loved and understood or feel whole and welcome in the world. And so we become sometimes addicted to our own suffering, and we seek to shore up our shaky self-image and achieve a belonging by appearing unique and special. Now, for me as a kid, perhaps for you, that really helped me, you know, like as a little person to make sense of my life. But I brought that into my adult life, Ben. And I can just tell you that until I rewrote the story of my life, right, it caused all kinds of problems for me. And so the story of you is about unearthing the old story with all of its mistaken beliefs and taken for granted ideas about how the world works, and being able to recraft it into a story that's more aligned with our values, that's more aligned with the person we were created to be. And what most people don't know is they don't have to stay stuck in their old story. Like, they have the freedom to rewrite it. They're the narrators of their story. And so I just get so excited because I've seen person after person after person, you know, as a therapist, make this journey and experience really profound transformation. If you don't do it, if you don't do the work, you asked me, how long can this go on? Sadly, from cradle to grave, brother. You know, I've met countless people in their 80s who might say, you know, well, let me give you an example. True story. There's a great teacher named Tara Brach, who I love very much. And Tara tells the story of a friend of hers who was sitting at the bedside of her mother who was dying. And her mom had been in a coma for 2 weeks. And at one point, she unexpectedly, like, sat up in bed, looked at her daughter and said, all my life, I thought there was something wrong with me. Mm. And then she fell, she reclined back down and died. So, dude, that's like a little bit of the four. That's like the four story right there. Yeah. Right. And she took it from cradle to grave. What a sad thing that she carried that story from adulthood through her entire life.
I do want to run through the stories of each number here in just a second. But I want to set a foundation first, because there's something urging inside of me that just, I think there's going to be people listening who maybe have never heard of your work before. And if they haven't, I would encourage you to pick up the book or listen to the Typology podcast here. There's a couple common things. I wrote a book about this. There's a few, I was trying to find the like thread line between humanity. Like, what does everybody have in common? And the one thing that continued to come up was everybody has pain and sorrows, that everybody's experienced some type of disappointment, some type of pain that they either hold on to or that they've healed from, but they've experienced it. There are unique people who at that moment, within the pain, sit in it, learn within it, and then try to heal from it. What you're saying now is that this work to do, to get back to a place of healing, to start to speak truth into yourself, is accessible to everyone. And there's not an age level where you should or should not start to try to heal.
Absolutely. You know, it's never too late to change. If I dare use that old tired, you know, axiom, but it's really true. It's a lifelong, you know, practice. And, you know, obviously the earlier people can do the work, the better. However, let's face it, you know, there's some work you can't do unless you have a little bit of mileage, right, on the odometer, until you've had a couple of crashes, until you can see the patterns that aren't working for you, you know, play themselves out several times. I've seen people do this work, begin the work in their 20s. I've seen people begin it in their 80s. I just received an email from someone like, can I change my story at 81? And I said, you totally can. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, I don't believe there's a clock on this journey.
So before we get into the numbers here, and tell me if it would be more helpful when I ask this question, if we should just do it as we walk through the numbers, but how does somebody recognize when they're in a place of hurt or pain or speaking lies into themselves? How do you even recognize that that is something that is amongst your everyday living?
Yeah. Well, I mean, two answers to that. One is that we begin to see patterns that play themselves out over and over and over again. They're self-limiting, they're self-defeating, they're hurtful to us, they're hurtful to others. And we're like, I don't know why I continue to do these things. I don't understand why I continue to feel this way, to act this way, to think this way, but I do, right? I mean, Ben, how many times have you said to yourself, okay, the next time I'm with so-and-so, I'm not going to do this. Mm-hmm. And then you show up to the dinner or whatever, and it's like it just happens. And you're like, mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and you see that in countless areas of life, right? So, I mean, I think this is just part of the human condition. And but we don't have to be tyrannized or victimized by it forever. You know, we can find some significant freedom from our broken stories.
All right, let's get into those stories then. If you want, let's run through the stories of each number, if you don't mind. And maybe somebody listening will relate and then say, hey, I need to do a little more investigation.
Sure. So in the book, I suggest that there are basically 9 stories. Now, one of which we gravitate toward and adopt in childhood as a way to navigate the world and to make sense of our lives, the traumas, the experiences we're having, the messages we're picking up. So type ones are called the improvers. And the underlying false premise of their story is this mistaken belief that the world loves and rewards only the good people and it judges the bad ones. And if you're trapped in that story, you try to gain love by, you know, kind of tamping down your anger, meeting your own high internal standards, and seeking to perfect yourself, others, in the world. Now, as a little person, that probably helped you get your needs met. So you should have a little gratitude for that crazy broken story. But you know what happens when that improver story shows up, you drag it into adulthood, right? You might be accused of being judgmental and critical, of being a black and white thinker, of, you know, on and on and on. That kind of perfectionism doesn't play out well in the adult world, right? Twos are called the helpers. And I think the underlying premise of their broken story is this unconscious belief that they can't be loved for who they are, but only for what they do for others, right? Through helping other people. Helps you as a little person. You can burn you out as an adult, right? If you continue to not acknowledge your own needs and keep meeting the needs of others. Okay. Threes are called the performers. They're folks whose dominant story is based on the mistaken notion that being successful and avoiding failure at all costs is the only pathway to being valued and loved. It helped you as a little guy. I could tell you stories about Andre Agassi, about countless other people who had that experience as a little person. And they brought it into adulthood. And if you've read Agassi's story, you know the effect that had on him as an adult, right? I encourage everyone to read that memoir, Open, if you want to learn about the three story. Fours, you and I, brother, the romantics. We grew up with this broken story, which revolves around the misguided idea that we're missing something crucial inside. And until we regain it, this missing piece, which, by the way, everyone else seems to have in our eyes, we're never going to feel loved and understood or whole and experience a sense of welcome in the world. And so what do? To bolster our shaky self-image and achieve belonging, we try to project an image that's special and unique all the time. Fives are called the individualists. Their broken story centers around the idea that the world is intrusive and makes too many demands on them, particularly relational demands. So they protect themselves by reducing their own needs, by sucking up vast amounts of knowledge to fend off feeling inadequate. Sixes are called the loyalists. Their story revolves around the belief that the world is a dangerous, unpredictable, chaotic place. And the only way they can feel safe and certain is by always preparing for the worst. So their story is filled with anxiety, right? As a friend of mine who's a six likes to say, I suffer from pre-traumatic stress disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Always getting ready, man. Sevens, the enthusiast story, this self-limiting narrative arises from their unconscious belief that painful emotions, thoughts, and circumstances have to be avoided at all costs. They're really afraid of being trapped in negative feelings from which they can't escape, or because they don't feel like there would be anyone there to support them should they get, you know, overwhelmed by them. And then eights, the challengers, their story revolves around this idea that we live in a dog-eat-dog universe where the powerful dominate and the weak always get taken advantage of. And so they believe they have to assert strength and power over others in the environment to mask their own vulnerability and weakness from themselves and others. And then finally, the nines, the peacemakers, we call them sometimes the sweethearts of the Enneagram. Their broken story comes up around the unconscious belief that the world doesn't really think their presence matters very much. And that to avoid disconnection and keep the peace, they think they have to just go with the flow, don't rock the boat, avoid conflict, and merge with the life agenda of other people or the group. So I could write 200 pages on the broken stories of each of these types. So that was a very high level flyby.
Hey everybody, it's Ben here. I just wanted to tell you about Generous. Generous Coffee Company is a company my buddies and I started a few years ago with one simple purpose, to provide the highest quality coffee. So when you hear people talking about, oh my gosh, that's the best coffee I've ever had, well, Generous would fall into that category, specialty grade coffee. And then 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. We also have apparel and coffee mugs, but our coffee is really what drives us. So today, go visit us on Instagram at generous_coffee, or please, please go visit our website, generouscoffee.com. You can buy some coffee for yourself, for your business, for your school, for your church, for your family. It's a great gift, and we love to provide it to you. So please, go out there today, buy some coffee. We look forward to having you as our guest and our client. It would be such a cool partnership, and I would love to hear what you think, so please review us online. Again, that's generouscoffee.com. 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. So, I mean, obviously, all of these nine stories are different. What is your hope, or what is the hope within your books and your work for each one of these different stories to realize? If they're all different, the healing process, I would imagine, has to look differently. And then the end outcome also has to look differently. So what is your hope within any of this?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, I think it's important for people to realize that there are nine stories, but there are an infinite number of expressions of each of those stories. So, you know, because I think people think, oh, that's so reductive. I mean, we've got 9 billion people or 7 billion, I don't know what the number is, on the planet. How can there only be nine stories? I'm like, there are nine basic stories, but within each of those stories, there are an infinite variety of expressions. What is my hope? My hope is that people realize that they don't have to be stuck in the old story, the old self-limiting narrative that has governed their lives from the shadows since childhood, and that they're the narrator of their story. This isn't something you're stuck with. You know, I think people resign themselves to the old story. Like, these are the cards I was dealt. Mm-hmm. They just assume that all the beliefs and all the internalized messages are true. And they just run with them like on autopilot through their lives. And I'm like, no, that is not true. That just isn't true. And so my hope is that in the story of you, I sort of help people walk through a process that will help them to reauthor their story, to take responsibility for their story and rewrite it. So my hope is for people to live into their authentic selves by living a newer and better and truer story about who they are and how the world works.
Okay. So people work towards that. They get there. If there's ever that finish line, they get to this point where they're living their most authentic life. How often, or is it even possible then for people to slip back into the old story?
Heck yeah. No question. It has, you know, it's got some magnetic draw for sure, right? Because it's the devil, you know, right? And, you know, all these messages and all these taken for granted beliefs, I mean, they have been deeply grooved into your neural pathways, right? They are just really, really sticky and powerful. That said, you can begin to develop a real mindful posture and practice in your life so that you can become aware of when you have slipped back into the old story and begin to ask yourself the question, do I really want to go back there? Really? And then begin to work on replacing or reminding yourself of the new messages, of the new story that you want to inhabit.
Well, if you don't mind, we'll get personal for a second here, because one of the hopes with Hope Still Wins was that we'd interview really incredible humans that have a story to tell. That's easy, because we would, at this podcast, believe everybody's really incredible and everybody has a story to tell. So our guest list is wide and we have a lot of options available. But people like you who have a voice that really matters, and you're a leader in a lot of the things that you do, do you ever find yourself slipping back into your old story?
Oh, can I tell you a story?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So one of the things, and you know, I'm a very open-minded person, but I'm an Episcopal priest. I don't have a parish, but you know, I went to seminary and I have all those theological degrees. And so I volunteer at Vanderbilt's Episcopal Chapel on Sundays. I just show up, and if they need help, you know, I help them. So it's Easter. Okay. And I'm on the altar and I'm just, you know, it's a glorious place. It's packed. It's glorious. And there's flowers everywhere. It's a sunny day and it's just, you know, perfect. And I happen to notice that in the very front row of the church, there's a guy wearing a blue, like a seersucker suit and a bow tie. And standing next to him is his 10-year-old son wearing the identical suit and bow tie. And he's got his arm around his son and they just are singing. And I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. I grew up in a broken home. I had a terrible relationship with my dad who died of alcoholism and drug addiction. And one of the things that 4s struggle with, part of their old broken story, is envy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking down and suddenly I could feel the old melancholy arising, you know, and I begin saying to myself, what if I'd had that experience? Oh man. And now I'm comparing myself, which is also a big thing for 4s. And so I'm like, man, my life would have been so much better, blah, 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 blah. Now, because I've done the work, I was like, in the moment, I was like, dude, do you really? This is Easter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, do you want to go back to that old story that you used to live in, that broken story that there's something wrong with you, that your dad, you know, there must have been something so bad about you that your dad couldn't love you? I mean, just the old script. You know, we got a script, all of us, right? And the script started running. But in the moment, because I'd done some work on reauthoring my narrative, it's like I was able to stop and go, not going there. And I began to feel the grip of that old story begin to loosen. And it just changed the moment in just a beautiful, powerful way.
One of the takeaways from my time on the Typology podcast is exactly that. For whatever reason, the last 12 months of my life have been full of envy and comparison. I cannot think of a time where that's led me to any place healthy or good. But when my wife now is recognizing it, my family, I believe, as I've started to speak out on it, of like, yeah, I've seen that rhythm in your life, but since you were a kid. But when I am in an unhealthy place, irritable, disconnected, confused, quiet, it usually is coming because I've sat in comparison, which has led me to envy. And unfortunately, whatever for my story consists of a world where everybody's envious of each other. It's a rat race to see who can be more famous and who can make more money and who can do this. And the more I've wrapped up in that, the more unhealthy I've became. And I speak of this because I don't know if this is the right comparison here. So correct me if I'm wrong. But some of this is my shadow self showing up. My shadow side. You mentioned your shadow side a little bit ago. And for those who have no clue what the shadow side means or even is, do you mind explaining it for a bit so people maybe understand more of what I'm trying to say?
Well, I mean, technically, Carl Jung, the great psychiatrist, came up with the term the shadow, right? And our shadow contains all those parts of who we are that we don't want to acknowledge or that we want to push out of our conscious awareness, right? So, you know, and by the way, your shadow also contains all those things that are most beautiful and wonderful about you that you've also hidden from yourself and from others that you need to learn how to bring out, right? Now, in the context of my work, each personality type has a shadowed side, right? So envy is part of the shadow of the four, right? And we have to bring that into our awareness, look at it, and work on it. And each type has its own, you know, kind of different shadow work that they have to do. And in my book, The Story of You, I actually dive in to helping people face their shadow and how they can begin to integrate that which is best about them into their lives. And then also be able to compassionately and kindly work on diffusing that part of their shadow that's holding them back from becoming the highest expression of themselves.
Well, I'm sure at this point, just have a few more minutes here with you. People are out there listening, they're relating, they're hearing this. And like I said earlier, please go check out Ian's work. The most recent book is The Story of You, and I'll mention the other books here at the end of the podcast. I just get this feeling that we're human and we're going to hear this and we're going to say, yes, I relate. And yes, I hear this. And this is speaking to me. This feels good to me. I want to do this work. And then we're going to move on with our day. We're going to go to work or we're going to start making food and we're going to forget about it. Ian, right now, what would be your recommendation for somebody who's saying, this sounds so good to me? What would be the best next step?
Well, I mean, we call it the work for a reason, right? It's not called the hack. Mm. There is no hack to personal growth, man. It's just we have to put in the time and the energy and the care to develop into the person that we're designed to be, right? To recover our goodness, to recover a felt experience of our own beauty. And right, that requires some effort on our part. If you're not ready to do it, there's not much I can do for you, right? If you're resigned and you just don't want to go on the journey, there's not much I can be. Well, I might say, well, put it in the back of your mind, but wait for a couple of more crashes and see if you're ready, right? I mean, there's nothing like a little bit of discomfort to move us toward making a change in our lives. But we don't have to. We can consciously say, I don't have to make up 10 more crashes. I can do this work right now, right? You know, I tell people who are struggling with this that oftentimes we just get confused. Like, how do I do it? This is all sounding so theoretical. Mm-hmm. But practically speaking, boots on the ground, what do I do? Well, in the book, The Story of You, I actually lay out a four-step process that people can use to begin to reauthor that old story, to unearth the internalized messages and the false beliefs that are holding them back, that continue to perpetuate the old story, so that they can reauthor it. Right. Now, I know what people are thinking right now. Four steps. Here we go. It's like, OK, well, look, you know, I only got 200 pages here, so I got to make it simple. Right. I mean, and you know what? It doesn't have to be complicated. Is this the be all and end all manual to life change? No, it's just one approach that will resonate, I think, with a lot of people. And it's the beginning Right. It's the beginning of a journey. It's not the sum total of it. But we got to start somewhere. Right. We got to start somewhere. And I think this is a good place to start.
Oh, also. Well, I mentioned that I would highlight some of the other work that Ian's done. Again, he is an author of multiple books now. He is also the podcast host of Typology. The books leading up to The Story of You include The Road Back to You. He's also written the novel, Chasing Francis, the spiritual memoir, Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me, and now The Story of You, an Enneagram Journey to Becoming Your True Self. Well, Ian, we ask everybody, first off, thank you for being here with us. It's always a pleasure. You're a gift to this world. I appreciate you doing this. But I want to end this with the same question we ask everybody. Ian, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if you don't, why not?
I absolutely believe that hope wins. You know, it's interesting. I would encourage anybody who hasn't read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. If you don't believe that hope wins, that's the book to read. It's one of the most powerful books written in the 20th century, one of the most influential. You know, Viktor Frankl was, as a young boy, was in Auschwitz, and he emerged from it with a tremendous sense of hope. It's just mind-boggling. And about the fact that all of us can choose the way that we respond to the world. We have freedom, we have agency. And again, that's a lot of what this book is about, hope. It's about the hope that we can change the story of our lives or rewrite it or reinterpret it, right? Experience a better future.
It's the second time that book's been recommended in the last month of this podcast. I think that's a sign for anybody listening, and myself included. I've never read it, and it has been recommended to me multiple times. Ian, thank you for coming on. Thank you for joining us. Again, the book is The Story of You, out now. Thanks for joining Hope Still Wins.
Thanks, man. Great being with you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. All right, that's it for today, my friends. As a reminder, make sure to grab a copy of Ian's brand new book, The Story of You, out now. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I cannot wait to talk to you next week.